Greeting everyone. Greetings. this is Will Tuttle, Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are so happy, Madeline and I are here together to be with you on our December 20th, 2018. This is really almost solstice tomorrow. Wow. Where did 2018 go? What a year we've had. This is our Will Peace Diet Circle call for December 20th. And I want to thank all of you for joining us. It's really a delight to be able to share together the challenges that we face and the opportunities that we have as vegan activists in the tradition of including spirituality and consciousness as part of our activism. And so I'd like to just welcome everyone from the bottom of my heart to this call. We have really had a little bit longer time than normal because of our lecture tour last month. We were on the second Thursday of November, and now, so it was kind of an extra long period of time between the two calls, but we're delighted that we're able to be together, and we'll be hearing, I think, a little bit later from Anna Ferguson, a little bit just about her Kickstart campaign that's been going really well for her book, World Peace Yoga, and also maybe a little bit from Judy, and I have some things I'd like to share also, and of course, if you have any questions or you'd like to make any comments, always feel free to press *6 on your keypad, and that will help you to, that'll raise your hand if you'll see it here on the screen. So, great. All right. So let's just take a few minutes and begin our time together sort of in the traditional manner, which is just to take a moment and turn our attention within, if that's possible for you to do if you're not driving or something. And even if you're driving, you know, just kind of turn your attention within anyway in some way that works for you. Let's do that, please. And give thanks together, feeling our connection that we have through our aspiration for compassion for all living beings in the 10 directions and the 3 times, as they say in Buddhism. And for all living beings, that we hold them in our hearts and dedicate our minds and speech and body to doing the best that we can to be a force for kindness and respect for all life. And we give thanks that we have a precious human life here on this beautiful planet where we can do this work and where we can make progress together in being part of what is, I would say, arguably the most significant social justice issue of our time, which is to help humanity transition away from and evolve out of the massive darkness and violence of animal agriculture and toward a plant-based way of living. So we give thanks for all of our brothers and sisters all over the world who are joined with us in this effort, and all those who have gone before us and all those who will be coming after us. We send them our heartfelt greetings and gratitude and ask for their wisdom and support in the efforts that we're making every day. And we just give our, we send our love and deepest best wishes to the whole web of life, to the animals who are suffering under human domination. It's unspeakable, the torment that they have to endure at our hands. And we hold them in our hearts. And all the free living animals, the so-called wild animals, celebrating their lives in nature, the whole vast web of of life here on this beautiful planet, inspiration to all of us. And we give thanks knowing that we're part of an awakening of consciousness on this planet of humanity, so that we can live our lives as we're intended to on this beautiful and abundant earth. So thank you all again for joining us, and knowing that we are doing the best we can every day to create a field of healing and awakening, not only in the life that we have ourselves, our own individual life, but that we can be part of a larger movement to do that. And that's really why we're together on this call, to talk about that and to really talk about the practical ways, as well as these ideas theoretically as well. All right, so let's see. I'm just checking here. I don't know if I think I'll just go ahead and wait. I don't see Anna. I'm not sure. There's a few phone numbers here that I'm not sure, but I don't see Anna. If you're on the call, just please raise your hand. Anna Ferguson, she'll be coming on maybe a little later. So in the meantime, I want to just give a little update. So since the last call in November 3rd, I think we were, no, excuse me, well, it was the second week in November, so it was November, it was November 8th. Wow, since November 8th, my goodness, seems like forever. Yeah, so after that, we did our big tour to the East Coast, and that really went really beautifully, and I want to just thank, it's so interesting, you know, these people in Delaware had been asking us for a few years if we would come to Delaware, to where they are in a little town called Lewis, which is near Rehoboth Beach, which I really didn't ever hear of. And so I kept thinking, oh, no, I don't know when we're ever going to get out there. So I always said, no, no, no. And then at one point, it just somehow it seemed like maybe it would be a good thing to do. They offered to set up things and help pay the airfare and so forth. So we thought, well, all right, we can maybe go ahead and do that. And it's a very interesting situation. A fellow who was a Catholic priest. I mean, he still is a Catholic priest, but he's somehow he's married and he's sort of out of it. And he said something very interesting. He talked about how for many years he was so bitter and angry with the Catholic Church for the various inconsistencies that he felt in their treatment of people and so forth. And he was sort of railing against them and trying to get the church to change. And it was interesting. He said that now he's in his 80s now. He said he felt that he harmed himself with his anger against the Catholic Church. And even though he was right, you know, he had this kind of self-righteous anger. But he realized that it was really hurting him more than anyone else. And he had such a beautiful way about him. He's very, very humble and giving and just a delight to be around. And he and his wife basically set things up for us there with some help of other people. And he was just kind of tickled because we didn't just go there and fly back to California. We decided to do a few other events since we're going to fly out there anyway. And so he said, so you mean, I wasn't just responsible for you coming out here to do this thing in Delaware. I was kind of responsible for this whole lecture tour you did. Wow. You know, and in a way, it's true. You know, one person, it was just him, just kept calling. He would call. He didn't use the internet. You know, he doesn't use the internet. So he would call and leave these messages, and he sounded like such a nice guy. And it's just, anyway, we ended up flying out several days early, and we did a lecture in New York City which was just fantastic. Our good friend Saurabh Dalal, who's a wonderful, he's a Jain and lives in both Washington, D.C. and New York City, kind of commutes between the two. He's an old friend of ours, a longtime animal rights activist, and he set up an event in New York City at a vegan restaurant there called Caravan of Dreams, and it was absolutely packed. You couldn't get any more people in there at all. And it was just a beautiful evening, I have to say. It was really well done. And then the next day we had this amazing experience that we were going up to Kingston, New York to give a lecture there, and then over to Boston. And so we headed out with plenty of time, I thought. You know, it started snowing, though, around noon. And then we headed out. We had to just be there by 6:30, and we left about 3, and there was some little snow on the ground, but I didn't think too much of it. I realized I made a big mistake there, and I thought we could easily get up there. You know, we would be up there by 4:30. It was only an hour and a half drive, and I didn't take into account that they just didn't plow the roads. They didn't do anything. Me, I guess, my memory, being raised in New England, in Massachusetts, the roads are always plowed immediately. They didn't do anything, and so we ended up just in a complete, utter snow traffic jam. Nothing, the traffic wouldn't move, and people were off the road everywhere, and our car was also kind of sliding everywhere, too. So we never made it. We couldn't make it there up to Kingston, and so we spent the night again in New Jersey. The event was pretty much called off because of the weather was so, it was an early storm, and it really took everybody by surprise. So, but then we were able to drive the next day up to Boston. And again, the Boston Vegetarian Society, by the way, if you ever go to Boston, it's one of the best. They're so well organized, and they have one of the largest vegan festivals in the whole country. It's a huge one. They have it in September. So they set up a terrific event. Again, it was really well attended. It was probably about 130 people, I think. And it was just a beautiful, with a catered meal and this whole thing. It was really fantastic. And then we went down to the Peace Center in outside Philadelphia and did an event there, which also went really well. And then to Washington, D.C., Saurabh set up an event at a cafe called the New Deal Cafe, a brand new vegan restaurant there. And then we went down to Rehoboth to Delaware that evening, and they had this really quite an amazing thing. I didn't realize it. It's kind of like Provincetown. It's very similar to Provincetown, which I guess if you know Provincetown, it's a lot of wealthy people love to go there and be at the beach. Provincetown is at the end of Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And it's very much like that, and they have this whole community, which is very vibrant, and it's a lot of gay and lesbian people, actually, that have gone there, and they're pretty well off, and so they've just bought a lot of property, fixed everything up, and they have a community center, and so this event was held at the community center that they have, and it was a catered meal. And it was very interesting because they had all these, there's not any vegan restaurant in that area, but there's a vegan kind of community. And so they got this guy who's a pretty well-known local chef who's somewhat vegan friendly to kind of oversee the whole thing. And then they had about 10 different restaurants, and every restaurant made a vegan dish and brought it over. And it was a huge event. I mean, they had two seatings. It was several hundred people, and then the lecture was in between the two seatings, and it was just packed. They sold out. I mean, they actually sold out, and they had to turn people away. And the food was spectacular. It was so creative. All these different chefs from all these different restaurants. They made each one of them made a vegan course. It was like a 12-course meal. And with a lecture in between. So they did a big thing. And then we did another event there on Monday night, which was at their local bookstore. And then we went to Herndon, Virginia, the following day, which was an amazing restaurant called Green Fair. By the way, if you ever are in Washington, D.C., It's one of only two, I guess, certified organic vegan restaurants in the United States. They went through this, they go through the actual certification. And, it was a really, again, a really wonderful event. And then we went to, Lancaster, Pennsylvania on Wednesday night. This was the day before Thanksgiving. And they gave a lecture at this, it was so funny. It was a sanctuary started by two women who are a couple, and they were city girls, basically from Lancaster, not real city, but, you know, they were, she, mine was a yoga teacher, that's a social worker, and, but they just are vegans, and they wanted to do something for the animals, so they bought some land just outside Lancaster, and Lancaster is one of the biggest, as you know, it's I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, the Mennonite, Amish people are there, and it's just a huge animal agriculture. They said it's like the largest, what did they say? They had a statistic, the largest non-irrigated farm output county in the entire United States, and it's mostly animal foods. So they're sort of in the middle of all this, and we had a lecture in the barn, and it was definitely below 32 in that barn. I mean, it was really cold, and probably in the, you know, mid 20s, and so everybody was in there, and they were all wrapped up in blankets. I gave a talk. I mean, really hardy people, I'm telling you. But it was great. And people brought food, and it was really neat. And then the next day, we went to back to Philadelphia at the Quakers. I spoke at the Thanksgiving. They had a vegan Thanksgiving dinner there. It was like we had Thanksgiving dinner like about 10 times, because every day before Thanksgiving and up to Thanksgiving, we had these big meals with people. And it was a really wonderful experience of the, vibrancy really of the vegan movement on the East Coast, and how they came together and really, on a grassroots level, and got lots of people out to help share the vegan message. And there was, you know, mostly, I would say, there were vegans there, but people, there was a lot of non-vegans present, so it was great to be able to share the vegan message with all these wonderful people. And so anyway, since then, we've been doing things here in Northern California and in San Francisco. We just actually spoke last week, very recently, at the San Francisco Public Library for the screening of a new film, which I highly recommend seeing if you have a chance. It's called The End of Meat, and it's on, I guess it's online. I haven't really checked, but it was excellent. I hadn't seen it before, so there was a screening at the library. It was great. It was a lot of people there. And then I gave a lecture and a Q&A afterwards for another, probably quite a while, at least another hour. People were so interested. They had so many questions, and they were just great, great questions. The film is not graphic, so it's not hard to watch, but it definitely addresses the abuse of animals, as well as the environmental impact, as well as the health impact. It's kind of an overall one. It's done by a German guy. But it's very well done, I would say. So it's a good sort of basic overview. It's not one of those films like Kip Anderson that really pulls you in so strongly. But it was well done. There was quite a bit of German. You had to read subtitles being translated. But he also interviewed a lot of people from the United States. You would hear quite a bit. So it's great. You know, I just love seeing all these the new films that are continually coming out, and seeing the way the movement is growing so quickly. It's really been so inspiring to see all these things happening. So that's basically it. And I think we're just to let you know, we're getting ready to leave in a couple of weeks on January 9th on a lecture tour to Phoenix, Sedona, Tucson, and Palm Springs, and then to Georgia and Florida. we're going to be with our RV in Southern California and Arizona and then fly over and be in Florida for probably a whole month and then fly back to Texas for about two weeks and then back to Southern California and then take our RV back up here. So we'll be, the next couple of months, we're going to be on the road. The next 3 months, we're going to be on the road. So we'll be doing the circle calls from the road. And I'll keep you posted about that as far as I say. Hopefully we won't have to change things around too much, but we might have to. Anyway, so that's just a little bit what's been happening for us. I do want to, I see that Anna has joined us here now. So I think I'll go ahead and unmute Anna's phone. And as I mentioned, before I do that, I'll just say I had mentioned earlier that we'd be joined by Anna. Those of you, most of you know who Anna Ferguson is. She's a longtime World Peace Dive facilitator. She came to the very first training we ever did way back, I don't know when it was, 2007 or something like that, maybe, in Michigan. With Mark Stroud and Judy Carmen was there, so many wonderful people. Judy's also on the call. We'll be hearing from Judy pretty soon also. And Anna is the founder of World Peace Yoga in Cincinnati. And they have the World Peace Diet as one of the required reading textbooks. And quite often we've gone there to help out with yoga teacher training, and they've put on Veg Fest, and they put on for 5 years the Jubilee, which had so many people from around the country and really around the world coming to Cincinnati for this whole wonderful vegan educational opportunity every October. We went to all five of those back in the days when we were living on the road and in our RV. And she's now got a book called World Peace Yoga, and she just did a Kickstarter campaign to increase the possibility of reaching more people with this with her new book. So I'd like to go ahead and unmute the phone of Anna now. And if you have any questions, remember just press *6 or any comments or anything to add to the conversation. All right, thanks so much. Here's Anna. Let's see. Are you there?
Yes. Thank you so much, Will.
You're welcome.
Really?
So tell us.
Yeah.
What's happening with the with your book? It'd be so nice to hear.
Well, yeah. For those that don't know, I'll share that the premise of the book is to assist people to create peace within, so that ultimately we can create world peace. And
yeah.
The sub-premise is that really yoga and veganism are one and the same. So I see it as a book for, obviously, the general yoga public, encouraging
mm-hmm.
them to go vegan, but also as a great tool for vegans to practice self-care and to maintain their inner peace in the midst of all the violence.
Right.
And so, but really working, the Kickstarter campaign is focused on reaching the 36 million people in the U.S. alone practicing, basically practicing asana, practicing the poses. However, we're definitely counting on the vegan community and the vegan yogis to connect with this book and to help share this message so that we can reach more people. And we did actually meet our Kickstarter goal, which is amazing for a small.
Yeah, that was incredible. How you did it so quickly. I was so happy. That
yeah,
was fantastic.
So the project to print more books and to create the digital version, which will allow us to reach people further and wider, is happening and in process. Books are being printed and the digital version is being created. And now we have a stretch goal in the campaign so that we can get more books printed and have them in more places. So the campaign continues on, and you can actually get the book at a discounted price. The retail is $36, and on the Kickstarter you can get it for $27, the soft cover. And for those out of the country,
yeah.
they will ship out of the country, but also you can get version, and It's, we're having a lot of fun with it, and just looking to keep reaching more people with the vegan message, and also reaching vegans to just take better self-care so that we can really be strong in the movement.
Wow, that's great. Yes, because the book is really a full color, like right on every single page practically, I think, is sort of a display. Do you want to say something about that, how you created the visuals?
Yeah, so there's a lot of art and color in the book, and it's part of the reason for that is for the art to be an inspiration to pick the book up and flip through it. But it also balances out some of the heavy content that is in the book, especially in relationship to what's going on in the world today and how that relates to our yoga practice and veganism. And so the art really is a great, I think, gives a great motivation to pick up the book and flip through the pages. And then it also balances out the heaviness of the words sometimes.
Right, right. And it also helps to convey the message, right? I mean, that's the big part of it, it seems like.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And actually, the cover of the book is a modern-day peaceable kingdom image. A lot of the art is just my vision, essentially, of a peaceful world that the lovely artist that put it together that contributed to the project assisted in creating that vision. So
right.
It's really wonderful.
Great. So how would people, if people wanted to get a copy of your book, is it just your website? Is that the best way? Like at this
world,
point, or Kickstarter?
Kickstarter right now is the best way because you can get the book at a discounted price through Kickstarter. And the name of the campaign is Yoga Revolutionize. So if you Google Kickstarter and Yoga Revolutionize, it'll pop up. But also, if anyone's friends with me on Facebook, or if you go to worldpeaceyogabook.com, that'll take you to our Kickstarter campaign as well, information on that.
Oh, worldpeaceyogabook.com. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. Great. And tell us a little bit, if you can quickly, also, because I think it kind of goes together. You have a school, a yoga school, but you're also working on a Montessori school for children where they can probably learn a little yoga too, right? Say a little bit about that maybe.
Yeah, so we're in our second year of the vegan Montessori school, which has just gone so amazing. And there's more kids entering the school in January. The kids learn many different aspects of yoga, and I'll just share that Noah came home from school a few days ago, and he said, "Mom, today in yoga, we didn't do any poses. We just learned to love all beings." And so, the kids are getting yoga on the mat, but they're getting yoga off the mat. They're learning meditation. They're learning mindfulness. They're learning how to deal with the stress of the world. And they're also learning that yoga is also about what we eat and how we treat each other. And so it's just so wonderful to have focus on kindness rather than performance, and putting stress on kids, but really emphasizing love and kindness and encouraging them to be creative in what is unique for them. So it's been really wonderful.
Wow, that's interesting. Great. I'm so glad to hear that it's going so well. And that's one of the things that we don't have a lot of is actual vegan schools that are completely vegan. I mean, there's maybe some schools have vegan options, or they'll have a Meatless Monday or something like that. And I think there's some talk of a few people here and there. But I remember when I was at the farm in Tennessee, and they had their own school, and they had probably 200 or 300 kids, probably about 200 kids at least, and the whole school was vegan just because the whole community was vegan, and it was so great for the kids because they didn't have any of these mixed messages coming all the time, and they didn't have any TV either for people to watch. So I think what you're doing is such a healthy thing, because it gives kids the opportunity to be immersed in a whole community setting and consciousness of respect for animals, and sort of normalizes it rather than making it a weird fringe thing.
Yes, absolutely. And the vegan families that are enrolled are just so enthusiastic about having this, and it's just like a normal thing. And we also have not vegan yet families enrolled, and they love that their kids are eating healthy and that they're learning about empathy and compassion, and they're also getting core academics. And so and we imagine that kids will inspire their parents, because that happens a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny, because a lot of parents really are concerned about education of their kids. And I'm wondering if at some point you might even have families moving to Cincinnati just so they can bring their kids to your school, so they can go to a vegan school. Because
I think it's a possibility.
Yeah. Right. As the word gets out there more and more. I know.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you guys are fantastic, what you're doing. And I'm so glad to hear that. So the Kickstarter campaign is going to continue, even though you've already met your goal. Is that right? People can still continue to get the book and contribute?
Yes. We're working on stretch goals now. And actually, that's what Kickstarter calls it, too. They said, you've reached your goal, and now it's time for your stretch goals. So, our stretch goal is to... We raised $5,400, a little bit over that, and our stretch goal is $9,000 to print even more books and to get it out there. So we're just keep on working.
Yeah, the vegan community in the United States is gotten so huge. I don't know how many, it's millions. I mean, we're talking tens of millions of people at least. And quite honestly, they're every one of those people, I think, would be open to this message. So you're saying is, for us to, you know, anyone who can, to kind of bring it to the yoga community, and we do that a lot too. We try to reach out to the yoga community, because this is something that's really on the map for them, I think.
Yeah, and I even know quite a few vegans that practice yoga and have yoga teachers that aren't vegan, and this book makes a great gift for those teachers that you love, that you would like to see make the switch.
Right. Yeah, because I've read the book, and I think I wrote something. I wrote the afterword for it, yeah.
Yeah.
And the book really is a very friendly book. It's not like this vegan book. I mean, it is, but it's a lot about actually how you do the postures well. And so it's really an all-around book that could help anyone. You know, it's not just only about vegan. So,
yes.
Yeah, it's great. Well, good for you. So thanks so much for anything else you want to add or anything?
Well, just really appreciate you and Madeline for all the work that you do and continue to travel, and just have a lot of gratitude. So thank you, and also happy holidays.
Right. Oh, and we're going to see you in May, right? You're going to be putting on a veg fest, and we have that on our calendar to come to Cincinnati.
Yes, we are really looking forward to that. And, we've got a great, great lineup of people.
Oh, you said Miyoko. I think I heard Miyoko Shinner is going to be speaking, too.
Yes, he will. Yes, he will be there.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Wow, great. Well, thanks so much, Anna. Appreciate your joining us. And if anyone has any questions for Anna, like I say, press *6. I can unmute your phone. And otherwise, we just send you a big hug and look forward to seeing you. Have a great holiday. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was really inspiring. I'm so glad to hear that her Kickstarter campaign was so quickly fulfilled. It's really kind of miraculous. It's great. And if anyone, I really also recommend the book. I think it's really well done, and it's a good addition. You know, we do some yoga, Madeline and I, and but I have to say, Madeline has really become the yogi on the hill here. And every morning she does at least a good hour most mornings, and I've really noticed myself that it has tremendous benefits physically, to, you know, in strength and balance and flexibility, and just I think overall it's an ancient system that really has a lot when it's done properly. She has a program on her computer thing, her little iPad that kind of she's a teacher, is amazingly good, it seems like, and really challenges. So there's beginner, immediate, advanced, and advanced is really advanced. So it's a discipline, I think, that can be very helpful physically. But as Anna's book points out, and as I've written about some too, it's important to understand that when we look at yoga in the context that it was originally created, ahimsa is really the foundation, nonviolence, and really the purpose. The purpose isn't to just become a great gymnast. It's really to evolve spiritually and in consciousness. And I think the two can go together. We were so touched. I remember when we were in India and then later also in, where was it, Hong Kong. There's a man, he's called the Yoga King, Raja Yogi. He's not that old. I can't remember his exact name, but he's considered, I think, sort of around the world to be the greatest or one of the world's greatest living yogis. He has these full color hardback books of his different postures that he does, and it's just incredible. I mean, what he does with his body, I can hardly imagine anyone who's so flexible and balanced and strong. You know, he does these amazing poses, and he's fearless, like right on the edge of 2,000 foot cliffs, and you know, on one hand, you know, bending over the edge of the cliff, you know, or on moving motorcycles, he does. He's got Guinness Book of Records. He's got the Guinness World Book record of the most yoga postures. Something like, I don't know what, 20,000 or so. I don't know, some huge number. But we've met him a few times, and he's the most down to earth, humble, you know, just non-assuming person you could imagine meeting. And I was really, he always responds to my emails. He's very, very respectful and so beautiful. I'm just telling you, it's just, I just love to see how these ancient practices can really work wonders, I think, in many ways, consciousness, when we practice them and embrace them. I think that's really what veganism is. It's practicing a way of living and trying to connect with deeper philosophy in a way that's real for us, so that it's not just about not eating meat, dairy, and eggs, and wearing wool, silk, and leather, and not going to Susan Sorkin's and rodeos, and now I'm a vegan. You know, it's not just that outer material kind of set of rules, which is fantastic. I mean, anyone who lives their life that way is certainly, I think, to be applauded, because it's difficult to do in our society today to go against the groupthink and the desire that we all have to conform to what other people are doing and to fit in at Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner and at the company barbecue or the church fish fry or whatever it is. But to actually, you know, live according to our values as to what's best for animals, for the earth, for our health, you know, all these different levels. So that's fantastic. However, just the point is that there's a deeper dimension to all this, which is really, like Anna was saying, it's world peace, which begins with inner peace, which is essentially an inside job, in the sense that it means really working with the way we relate to the people in our families and to ourselves, and the actual flow of our thoughts throughout the day and our feelings, how conscious we actually are as we go through our day. And I think veganism is a calling to question not just our food choices, but many of the other attitudes and worldviews that we all hold, just by virtue of being born into a culture that's been practicing animal agriculture for 10,000 years. We've all been wounded by that, and even if we go vegan, we heal part of the wound, but there's still more we can always work on. And I was just talking to a woman today in Phoenix, where we're going to Phoenix in a few weeks, and she was telling me how she's in a vegan group there that's more based on spirituality and sort of the world peace diet approach. And she said there's a lot of young people who are now vegans and are activists, and there's this big divide, in a sense, a divide between the people who don't really feel drawn to protest against animal agriculture directly, and people who feel like that's the only way to be effective as a vegan advocacy, is to confront people with what they're doing, confront the industries. And what she was saying is that she's just seeing such a high degree of burnout among these young people. They get really angry, and they don't feel that they have any right to be happy or to take time for themselves, because they say the animals aren't happy, the animals can't take time for themselves. You know, I've got to work for them. I've got to do this. We've got to immediately stop this whole thing. And I really understand that. I remember when I was in my late 20s, I had a lot of that. It's very similar. I was so wound up in many ways with the urgency of the situation that I was always talking, whoever I could talk to, I went to protests and shouted and along with everybody else and marched and so forth, did different things. But I think there's a reality that we have to begin to grow into, which is that we are born into a society based on animal agriculture, which is based at a deeper level on materialism, or gives rise in many ways also to materialism, which is that if we just want to make any progress in anything, the only way to do it is by doing something. And that essentially consciousness is merely an epiphenomenon of matter. You know, the consciousness comes out of our brain, and that kind of idea. That's a materialistic, extremely materialistic view. And so there's, I think, an emerging blend of spirituality and activism that's happening. And this is so important, I think, for us to mature as a movement, so that we're realizing that our consciousness is the one thing that we can really change. We can't change other people. We can plant seeds. We can, you know, we can do actions. We can, you know, we can try to educate people and so forth. But the quality of our own consciousness, that's the key, I think. People are beginning to realize that. And so the point I want to make here is that there's two levels. There's two dimensions of this. So when we bring our own consciousness and a caring for our own consciousness into our advocacy and into our activism, it really does two, there's two levels at work. One level is what she's talking about, the fact, you know, self-care, not burning out. If we don't take time every day, from my point of view anyway, to engage in activities that are healing for us, like meditation, or having a time of quiet prayer, or connecting in a positive way with nature, or maybe doing yoga or tai chi or working with energy, but something that we feel is connecting us with the deeper wellsprings of consciousness, of life, and with the beauty of the world, so maybe some art or music that we engage in, but we really, I think, it's so important to have, to feed ourselves on that level. And that level is the level of our self-care. In other words, it helps us not only to do this every day for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years and just keep doing it. We don't burn out. We're not consumed with anger and disappointment and frustration because people don't change, because we're also every day connecting with the transpersonal dimension of consciousness, you know, that dimension that goes beyond just the mere mask that I'm wearing in the world, trying to get people to do things or trying to impress upon them something or whatever it is. We get to the deeper level of the eternal being that we are, and we act from there, and it keeps things in a bigger perspective. And so that's I think very helpful in terms of just having a movement that's healthy, where people can stay in it and they can stay connected with their creativity. Because creativity really comes out of cultivating our receptivity, the feminine dimension of consciousness, which is really what is so repressed by animal agriculture. It's the feminine dimension. It's about raping animals, stealing their babies, suppressing the feminine, suppressing women, and making everything very, you know, patriarchal and masculine and materialistic. These all go together. Shallow surface kind of might makes right mentality. So as we deepen our connection to the sacred feminine within ourselves, whether we're a man or a woman, it doesn't matter. It's all been repressed and has capacity to be receptive. Then we connect with the strength that we have, the resilience and the energy and the creativity and the joy of joie de vivre, you know, the joy of being alive. We don't need any reason to be happy. We can be happy just because here we are. And we're on this beautiful planet. And yeah, there's a lot of challenges. There's lots of suffering. There's lots of ignorance and delusion. Yeah. You know, we understand these as facts. It's, you know, it's extremely disturbing to be aware of this. But that's not the whole story. There's also lots of people loving and caring and doing their best they can to bring peace and love and healing into the world. There's a lot of that, probably a lot more of that, actually. So that's one level. So this is all that level of keeping ourselves healthy and resilient and being more effective and creative. Then the second level, I want to get to the second level. The second level is this. The second level is more radical. The second level is when we're doing this meditation, when we're doing the prayer, when we're actually in, you know, disconnecting our mind from the cultural program, we're actually doing activism. I mean, that is activism. We don't have to be physically active to be doing activism, to be effective advocates. And that's from the materialist point of view. They say, oh, you're just sitting there, you're not doing anything. Yeah, that's maybe true, but doing something does not mean only physically doing something. We can become totally addicted to being always busy with 10,000 things, thinking we're being really effective. And the experience, I think, at a deeper level is that someone who takes the time to sit still and more deeply understand themselves, that they're transforming not just their consciousness, but really at a deep level contributing to the transformation of the consciousness of the entire human population. And it's because we're all interconnected at a deeper level. There's a telepathic connection among human beings. And we all know this. I experience this all the time with Madeline. I think a thought and she says it, you know. I mean, you know, we see this happening all the time, and I see it happening with other people too. But it's been well understood in other cultures. Other cultures, ancient and indigenous cultures, always included a spiritual dimension in their social and political life. Basically, I mean, they basically understood that's part of it. You know, the kings in the old days, they would always go to one of these prophets or someone to give them guidance from another deeper level to help them. And or indigenous cultures had people who especially would connect, make an effort to connect with the harmony of nature to help guide the decision-making process from a deeper level. And that always happened. But when we had this sort of the change in our society, and even really into the medieval period, the church was kind of involved. But we have this situation in an animal agriculture society that's been going on for so long, where now that's been completely just marginalized so much that now we just think all of us are just objects that we're born and will die, material, living is all that there is, and we don't have any deeper wisdom. It's just whatever our rational mind and logic can come up with. And, you know, rationality and logic are wonderful. Obviously, if we were rational and logical, as I always say, Madeline and I wouldn't have to travel and spread the vegan message because everybody would be vegan if we were rational and logical. But and there's just so much deeper currents to who we are, and our yearning for conformity and approval and our fear of rejection and all these other things, our emotional misadjustment, basically, that we don't really understand ourselves. And so I think it's really time for us to rise above the materialist delusion that vegan activism has to confine itself to doing something, you know, because that's the opposite of veganism. Veganism is an awakening out of materialism, not seeing animals as matter, not seeing people as matter, and not being a slave to the materialistic view that physical action is the only way to get anything done. It's definitely helpful to do physical things. I mean, we write books, we travel around, we talk, you know, we do things, and you all are doing things. I mean, it's great to be active, but I think it's important for us to never lose sight of this deeper truth that it's really consciousness that's primary, and the time that we take to send love to the world. You know, these practices, like in the Tibetan tradition, like the four Viharas, where we just meditate and send love, compassion, joy, and peace. We have, you know, we created that CD. We sell it to people if they want to buy one or whatever. But just practicing, you know, radiating love, compassion, joy, and peace. And maybe it only changes us, but maybe it also, like if I'm cut off by somebody in traffic and I send them some love instead of some frustration or anger, then maybe it does help them feel a little bit better. It definitely helps me feel better, but it's sort of contributing to the transformation of our society. In the Tibetan tradition, there's the taking and sending practice, which I think is a pretty advanced practice because you have to kind of know what you're doing, but you actually inhale all the pain and misery and suffering and the horror of the world into your own heart and then transform it. And then breathe it out as joy and liberation and freedom. You know, and there's people that do that every morning for the animals. They breathe in all the suffering of the animals and transform it into joy and then radiate it out as liberation for animals. And that's a form of subtle activism, I would say. It's a way of helping to raise awareness, because I'm caring and I'm thinking about and I'm transforming the energy of suffering within my own heart and sending it out into the world. And I think in any event, it affects us. And there's something in my PhD dissertation I wrote about, the Maharishi effect is what researchers call it, when people get together and everyone meditates for peace, and they find actually that statistically 20 different social indicators, the rates of robbery and suicide and so forth, all go down, you know, for that period when people join together. If we have enough people all joining together in meditation, it actually seems to affect other people. And it makes sense when you think about the deeper level of humanity, that we're consciousness and that we're connected. So I really think that it's important to understand these two levels, that doing inner work is helpful not only to us when we do it, but also it actually helps. It's actually part of the activism that we can do. It doesn't mean that we don't also engage in action, though. So yoga, I think, is one aspect of this, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to continue to experiment with this, because this is what this woman was saying in Phoenix. She's saying, you know, can you give a talk that we can bring all these young people to, and we can talk about these things? And I think it's just basically about raising awareness to the great degree that we've all been wounded by a system that's based on animal agriculture. All right, so I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to turn it over to Judy. Actually, I just see that Grace has raised her hand. So, Judy, Carmen, I really want to hear from you, so please stay tuned. I can see you're still here on the call. And yeah, but Grace, go ahead. I'm going to unmute you because you have a comment, a question. Hello? Are you there, Grace? Or
yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Here we go.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. Thanks. So I'm just really overwhelmed with feelings. I wanted to thank you so much. I've really been struggling that, you know, I need to go do more things, and I haven't done enough, and, I've influenced some people, but it's like, oh, I have all these big ideas. I could just, if I do so much more. Yeah, when you said 10,000 things, it kind of really struck my heart. And
right.
And that, I was really, really grateful to attend Thanksgiving. How fun you and Madeline got to have Thanksgiving so many times.
Vegan Thanksgiving.
Vegan Thanksgiving. Yeah, I went up to Santa Fe, and Ray and her beautiful partner, JC,
cool.
I had met them, actually back in Charleston, South Carolina, some years ago with their beautiful dog, Bapu, and her nephew, Stacy, I've been reflecting that there are all these beautiful, beautiful women. Judy, too. Oh, my God, I received a gorgeous, beautiful, just a heartbreakingly gentle email from Judy. And is there any way, is there, besides the art that of Madeline that's on the on your website and the music that you've done together, is there any way for us to get to know Madeline and her life and kind of look to embody the way she lives? I mean, I'm so glad to hear that she's got a yoga teacher. That's great. But is there any other ways that we could learn to emulate such a beautiful and effective lady as your spouse?
Well, that's so sweet. I think that's very nice of you to ask. Let me see, Madeline, do you want to come on? I don't know if you're. I think she's in the other room. Let me see.
I can.
Oh, wait. Here she is. Okay.
Yeah. Hello. Hi, Grace. Good to hear you there.
Madeline, you're so beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. And I couldn't quite get the question about can you repeat the question very simply, what you mean?
How else, besides looking at your beautiful paintings and listening to your flute, how else can we get to know you as a powerful, feminine being in bringing the vegan message to our troubled world?
Wow, that's a question which is pretty hard to. I don't have really an answer. I mean, you have a really wonderful question. I think looking at the art is probably a good idea, and listening to the flute and with the piano of Will's. I mean, there is all energy in there, and like the music especially also is very balancing, and I think it's very meditative, and looking at the picture deeply in an open way without putting one's mind into it, so more meditation way of looking at it is very powerful too. And then And then listening to your heart, your inner deep self, which is not connected to your thinking or wishful thinking or so. I think you're such a beautiful being, Grace, I have to say. And it's like I'm always impressed when I see you, and it's beautiful, and it's such a beautiful question you have. And yeah, just maybe try it this way, and some spiritual reading is always good, of a good kind, and we can enter this in an email.
You have your videos.
Oh yeah,
too,
the videos.
And maybe we can make a few more videos. That might be a good. We can try to answer Grace's question with a video, a few more videos, maybe of cooking and gardening, and then
That's
right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I forget because I often don't have good internet access. I can watch more videos. Yeah. I didn't mean to ask a crazy kind of question. I was just so touched, and as I listened to Will talking about having the nonviolence and being effective and not necessarily having to go out and in the world. And I just thought of you and Judy and Ray and Stacy and also Jenny from the Humaneness and the Peaceable Kingdom. There's so many beautiful women.
Yes.
I remember you in the compost tea, and you're walking through the garden, and you're giving tea to the plants. I'll do that. I'll find some internet access and watch some videos. Thank you so much.
All right. All the best to you, Grace. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Grace. Thank you. Much love. Wow, that was beautiful. All right, well, thanks. Thanks so much, Grace and Madeline, for, that was really sweet. So maybe I'll turn it over. I know Judy, I promised I'd like to hear a little bit from Judy. Judy's with us on the call, too, tonight, which is great. Judy Carman, I should say. This is Judy Carman, and she's a long-time vegan, going way back, and we created the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals, Circle of Compassion, and she lives in Lawrence, Kansas with her husband, Michael. Judy, are you there?
I am, Will. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, that's
okay,
great. Thanks.
Great.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Great to hear your voice, and hi, everybody, and hi, Grace and Madeline.
Yeah, they're right here. They're listening. We were talking a little bit earlier, as you heard about the veganism and spirituality. And I know, I think it was last. I can't remember actually, but I think you talked. Did you talk a little bit about the Parliament of World Religions?
I think I did. I wasn't on the call last month because I had the vegan spirituality call.
That's right.
That I was doing. So I think I must have mentioned a little bit about the Parliament in the call.
I thought that was before
the Parliament happened.
Right.
Because that was the first week of November.
Right.
In Canada.
So, There's two things that happened that you were part of, and I was just thinking it'd be nice to just get a report, maybe some of your impressions. One was the Parliament of World Religions, which was in Toronto, and it was, you can tell us, you know, quite a few thousand people from all the different world religions gathered to talk about inclusion. That was the theme, and they had, you know, it was a huge event with thousands of people and you know, speakers, and we had a booth. I mean, the vegan spirituality people had a booth, and then also the Vegan World 2026 conference, which was in, I think it was in Phoenix right before that.
Mesa.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And just your impressions about that, because I think it's very much, these are all kind of connected to some of the things we're talking about since you were able to be there. If you had any thoughts you wanted to share briefly about what you learned or what you felt, what came out of it.
Definitely connected with what you're saying, that's for sure. And it's given all of us who were involved, and you would have been, but you guys were on your European tour. But anyway, we carried on, and it was, everybody just felt like, oh my goodness, we're really reaching a tipping point here, not only with veganism, but also with connecting spirituality with veganism.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been kind of a long time coming. And so anyway, the one that we went to in Mesa, Arizona, that was the last weekend of October. And
right.
One little side note on that is that every month Mesa, Arizona has a vegan block party and right downtown, and hundreds of people were there, and there's all kinds of booths, and they do this every month. And all the booths, all the products, everything is vegan. And, of course, it coincided with the Vegan World 2026. And so Jane Belez Mitchell was there, and she was talking all about it. So I'm sure some people that were at the block party then decided to go to the Vegan World 2026, which started the next day. So, but there were about 100 people there, and it was quite beautiful. The for anyone who wants to read a blog about it, Joanne Farb wrote a great blog with lots of pictures, and her website is vegan. Let's see, it's Joanne, J-O-A-N-N Farb, F. as in Frank, A-R-B as in boy, .com. And if you just go to the blog section, you'll scroll down and you'll see her Vegan World 2026 review, which will give a lot of details and really good review. But it was put on by Climate Healers, and their website is climatehealers.org. Silas Rao, I think he's been on your show, Will.
Yeah, we've had him on here.
He's the founder of Climate Healers, and he is the one who put this all together this weekend. He wanted us to basically brainstorm about how to prevent year zero, which is 2026, if nothing changes, if no one does anything and everything just keeps going the way it's going. The prediction is based on the current trajectory of extinction, is that all wild vertebrates would be extinct by that time, by that year. That's only 8 years away. But we all know as vegans that we can prevent that from happening by getting more vegans and by eliminating animal agriculture, which is causing one of the major causes of all this extinction.
Right. So
it was extremely inspiring, and Dr. Rao asked us all to basically break up into small groups. Like one group was about spirituality, one was about economics, one was about the environment and so forth, and brainstorm, come up with a lot of different ideas, questions, solutions, things that we can do. And then his goal is to keep these think tanks going and working. So this will be happening. And he's having another, we'll be meeting on, you know, conference calls, but he's also wanting to meet, I believe, twice a year. And I think the next one is in Jerusalem, I think. I'm not positive of that, but that would be on his website, which is climatehealers.org. So it's a really good website, very, very inspiring. And he is as well. So it was a great event for networking, finding out what so many people are doing. Jane Velez Mitchell taped a lot of it on Facebook Live, and so I believe you can go to her website, which is Jane Unchained, and check in on some of the videos that she took. I wanted to mention real quick, too, that on Sunday we had a religious service, which was multi-faith, at a vegan church there in Mesa, Arizona. And I'm finding that there's more and more vegan churches popping up and vegan ministers. So that was really a huge treat, and just right on what you're talking about, Will, the idea that we can do activism through our spirituality practices. So that was really good to attend. And then we met some more, and then the thing was over Sunday evening. So then, very quickly, we got ready to go to Canada. And when I say we, I'm referring to the Interfaith Vegan Coalition that Lisa Levinson and I started. And it is what we're doing with that coalition is trying to help people get into their places of worship with resources that we're providing on our website to bring films and try to convince the people in the church or a place of worship to have vegan meals only and just gradually transform their place of worship into vegan places, which only makes perfect sense because then they have the congregation has finally aligned their true values with their actions, which would be vegan.
Right, the spirituality and the religion line up then.
Right,
right. Yeah.
So, but the Parliament of World Religions, there were over 8,000 people there. It was absolutely huge. And there were talks going on constantly. They said they were telling us like 60 talks at a time. And in this huge venue, this really big convention center in Toronto. So, but we had a booth, and on one side of the booth, it was 20 feet by 20 feet, on one side was the Interfaith Vegan Coalition sign, and it was way up high, so a lot of people saw it, and we included Dr. Rao's brochure, his brochures and his banner on the Vegan World 2026, so we talked to people a lot about that. And we also had Lisa Kemmerer's art display of animals and world religions. These beautiful banners went up the side of our booth on both sides. And then on the other side of our booth, Abhishek Sinha had a booth where he was offering vegan samples of his new food line, which is called Green Dot, or Good Dot, I'm sorry, Good Dot is what it's called. And he is from India. There's so much to say, Will, so you may have to stop me. But another thing that Abhishek did at this parliament is we managed to have a vegan banquet there for 300 people. And the way that occurred was that we heard that the Charter for Compassion, which is a partner of the Parliament of World Religions, was going to have a banquet, a fundraising banquet. And so we called them and said, you know, since you're about compassion, it makes sense if it would be vegan. Can we help do that? And they welcomed us with open arms. And then Silas knew Abhishek and his Good Dot company and got them together with the charter. So we used his food. And it was not easy, I guess, to get it over from India through all the customs and everything. And the chefs worked very hard and created this absolutely gorgeous meal for all of these attendees, many of whom were not vegan. And then they already had someone to say the opening prayer. We had really hoped that Will could be there to do that. But again, that interfered with the European tour. And so we had suggested several other people, but they already had a Native American who was slated to do the prayer. So they actually said, you know, since we don't have an opening for you to verbally give the prayer, would you write one down and we'll put it on a nice card and put it by everyone's place setting? And by golly, they did that. I wrote the prayer, a meal prayer, and I quoted Tolstoy, who said, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields. And they left that on, and they printed up these beautiful cards, colorful cards, and they were, sure enough, at everyone's place setting. And so people were able to read that and understand that this was a vegan meal, and the reason for that was so that the Charter for Compassion would be eating in alignment with their value of compassion. So that took place the second night, I think, and then we had so many people come to our booth. It was really phenomenal. A lot of people were vegetarian and wanted to know about how to go vegan, but the reception was so warm and so enthusiastic. It was really quite, I think a lot of us were really quite surprised that we had such a warm reception. Also, there were several speakers who gave vegan talks. Lisa Kemmerer gave one, and Charlotte Cressy gave one, and
Dr. Neil Bernard.
There were several others, and several...
Dr. Neil Bernard gave one, right?
Yes, that's right. Neil Bernard talked about his Universal Meals program.
Mm-hmm.
He's calling veganism universal, which I love, because if hospitals and airlines, that's who he's wanting to promote this to, and schools, if you make it he has no peanuts, no obviously no meat, no dairy, no animal products, and no gluten, then anyone can eat it. And so he is this is his new project to promote this, and we just thought that was a genius label for that.
Yeah, it saves the money. You know, everybody can eat it, and everybody's happy, especially with some of these, all the new foods, you know, that are indistinguishable practically from meat and chicken and fish.
Well, that's making that really kind of possible.
So the
food that was served at the 300-person dinner that I was talking about for the Charter for Compassion, those were plant-based meats that they used in the different recipes. And I don't usually buy that or like it. I've just been vegan so long. But I think they're wonderful because they really help people who, are making the transition. It helps them so much. But I really liked it. It really tasted good. So, yeah, it was just, I mean, I could go on and on. And I wrote...
Yeah, we have to kind of wrap it up. We're getting late on our call.
Let me just say, I wrote a blog about the Parliament, and there's pictures on it. And that is at peacetoallbeings.com. So you can go there and look at that to get more of an idea. So...
Thanks for these links. There's, I'll go ahead and put these for everybody when I send out the email. Peace All Beings, and then the one Joanna Farbs for the Vegan World 2026. And for anyone who wants to see it in the resources for December that you already can access now on our website, on the very top of page 2, I have Sally Shaw's summary of the questions raised in the discussion of the recent Vegan World 2026 conference in Arizona.
Yeah.
So you can just read that. That gives a good overview too.
Because
I think these are big things, really. It's planting a lot of seeds where they can go back and reach a lot more people. So
yeah,
we live in such critical times with the year zero is only 8 years away. If we continue on the same trajectory of causing species to go extinct, that means, I mean, all vertebrate mammals will be extinct. I mean, I wonder if that includes humans. It probably does if we're
continue in that
way. So,
yeah.
But that's powerful. I mean, it's like when we are entering this. It's called liminal, a liminal time. Liminal is the old word for threshold. You know, we're on a threshold time. We can't use them anymore. It's time for a whole new story. And as we become aware of that, I think massive changes can be mobilized. And it sounds like what you were up to is part of that. So thanks, Judy.
Yeah, thanks.
Really wonderful to get this little bit of insight, and then I'll give the link so people can find out more if they're interested.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Will, and happy holidays, everybody.
Yes. Thanks so much, Judy. Okay.
Right.
Thanks again. Yeah.
Right.
Talk to you later.
Nice.
Bye-bye. Night. And I'd like to, we only have a few minutes left. I'd like to, if Lily Macy is here, I just wanted to say hello to Lily and just maybe hear a couple of words from her. And then I'd like to kind of wrap it up with a quick overview of some of the main points in the resources, the things that have happened in the last month. Before we go, I know we only have a few minutes left here, but it's been great. Thank you, everyone. So, Lily, are you there? I don't want to put you on the spot, but this is kind of
just overwhelmed by these women that came on tonight, so I don't know if I can say anything. I mean, what have I got to say? I mean, I'm blown away, and I'm so happy to hear about what's happening here. You know, it fuels my spiritual energy. But you did mention something in your talk just recently when you were speaking. You were talking about the prayer and meditation on the whole situation. Well, whatever you were saying, I could relate to it in this way. 12 years ago when we read The World Peace Diet, we started a practice, and I've mentioned this before, and the practice was, for the first several years, just reading the World Peace Diet to each other, a page or two right before dinner, and then praying for you and Madeline. So out of that, I wound up doing World Peace Diet Sunday for 4.5 years, and so I've read the World Peace Diet 8 times myself, aloud, but this practice of praying for you and Madeline every single night with this great gratitude of just sitting down to a vegan meal and knowing that happened because we read your book and that was such an accident of fate. And we were swept away by it. We became vegan within the first 3 chapters and made a pact. I said, "We're vegan, aren't we?" And he goes, "Yeah, we're vegan." But that was it. But that practice of praying for you and Madeline every night before we dine, and I look at the meal and I say, "Look how beautiful this food is. It's marvelous. I want to invite all my neighbors here." right. Show them veganism is beautiful.
Yes.
But we
right.
always pray for you and Madeline. And I also do the compassion prayer that you and Judy formulated every day at noon.
Yes.
Those two, two prayers, the one, and I started with, I didn't know about the compassion, well, I don't think it had been instigated
right.
yet when I read the book, but that, we started doing that almost from day one, and how that's translated in our own lives is a sense of well-being regardless of circumstances. Just a sense of well-being because we know we're connected. At that moment that we're praying for the well-being of you and Madeline, you're these dear, dear brother and sister that we so love. We're with you at that moment. So we get a dose of you every single day, which is marvelous because who else would we want to be in touch with than the people that completely, both of you, really, you know, with Madeline, I know your whole story. It needs to be written up in a biography about both of you. But really, truly, without your birthing us, we would not be the transformed beings we are. We are transformed every day anew because we're vegan. And that just that one thing that we're hanging on, that we, regardless of what the world is doing, regardless of the crazy politics, regardless of the family situations,
right,
whatever,
right.
It gives us the personal kind of exuberance to know that, that transformation really is possible on a very deep level. And we never look back and said, oh, gee, we wish we hadn't read that book, and too bad we're vegan. Wouldn't it be easier if we weren't vegan? It's never been like that. It's always been, yay, veganism is such a beautiful way to live. It's just, it totally blows my mind every day. It's like living in living color all the time.
Wow. Thank you, Lily. You just spontaneously, I think, give the icing on the vegan cake there. Thanks so much.
Well,
for
I'll tell you, I live
words.
It every day. You know, I tell if I call my insurance company, if I call whatever, whoever I'm calling, if I'm calling
the bank,
I make calls. I'm not online out here in the boonies. So
right.
anytime I talk to someone, the first thing I say, maybe one of the things I say is, you know, we're older people, you know, old is what you think you are, and we're in great shape, and would you like to know why? Because a lot of people, that's what they want to know. How can I be in good shape and stay in good shape? So I open it up that way, or if they tell me something about, oh, I love cats, I say, oh, you like animals? Yeah, that's great, and, you know, then I go and I open it, I segue, and I do that so often that it's like outside my own personal activism, because most of these people are young people.
Mm-hmm.
They're answering the phone. They're being of service. They're service people. And I love calling them all. I call them. Yeah, I love paying my bills because I can always spread the message of the world peace diet. You know, it's pay my credit card and pay it not online. See, because online, they're not going to hear me online. They're just going to see
right.
But they hear me. And you know something? I've had people say, wow, you've made my day. You blew me away. These are people, and I always get their age. I see what the demographic is. They're anywhere between 23 to 50, most of the people. So it's so cool because a lot of them say, I've never met anybody like you on the line. And I say, and you never will. Except there's millions of us out there that are turned vegan. And I'm turned on every day just by being vegan. It energizes me. It gives me the power to live my complex, difficult life because it's not easy what I'm doing out here in the boonies.
Oh, I know.
With my husband.
Really.
You know, it's not easy.
So
it's not an easy life. But it's so fantastic because I'm vegan. So I'll wrap that up with that. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks so much, Lily. It's really beautiful to hear from you. And
my vegan dogs and cats, too. 12 years on vegan formula.
Exactly. Wow.
12
That's
years.
Fantastic.
My dogs are now 12 and 13 years old. My cats are all 13 except for Princess Madeline Tuttle Pussy Willow, who is born, practically born vegan.
Vegan, yeah.
And she has been a vegan since she was 1 month old. I adopted her when she was like the size of the palm of my hand. She was found in the forest. She was motherless. I became her mother. And she's my vegan baby from practically day one.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
I love it. I love it. It's so much fun.
Thank you, Lily.
And they're beautiful animals. They're in great shape.
Right. Right, right. That's it. That's what we have to help people know. All right. Thanks so much. We'll send our love. Take care. So, yeah, that's so great. You know, I was just looking through when Lily was talking about the pet situation. One of the articles that I wanted everyone to read, and I have a link to it, is this article from a white paper, a research paper, and in the United States, pets in the United States, we're talking about dogs and cats primarily, pets in the United States eat an estimated 30% of all the meat eaten in the United States, making them equivalent to the fifth largest country in the world in terms of meat consumption. I mean, think of that. Just the dogs and cats in the United States eating 30% of the meat that's eaten in the United States. If the pets in the United States were a country, it would be number five in the world in terms of meat consumption. So this is completely unnecessary. Not only are the human beings in the United States eating more meat per capita than any country in the world, but our pets are eating massive quantities of animal flesh and causing enormous suffering doing that too. And it's unnecessary, as Lily is beautifully demonstrating. So that's a very important point. I think it's becoming more and more clear. So please, everyone, if you have a chance, go through the resources for December. I spend a lot of time doing this, but I love doing it. So, you know, you don't have to look through it if you don't want to. I'll do it anyway. But but if you want, the first bunch of things on page one are just links to my lectures and articles and interviews in the last month, which were fantastic. A lot of them, wonderful people doing great things on the radio, television, internet, everywhere, articles. And then farther down, I have a link actually right here, our Judy Carman's report on the November's Parliament of World Religions in Toronto. So it's about two-thirds of the way down on the first page. There's a link there to her Peace to All Beings website. Going farther down, there's a great article by George Monbiot, who's a very well-known journalist in London, Eating Meat and Dairy Must Stop. And he really did a great job on Democracy Now! On radio. And, you know, really, I was very impressed. He covers everything very passionately, very well. And it went out to, you know, millions of people. This is really good. And then the next one, there's Meat on the Menu at the United Nations Climate Change Conference. This is in Poland, the one that's going on right now. That should scare you. I mean, the fact that there's much more meat on the menu this time than last time, very bizarre thing. So it's good to see people questioning that. But there's, you know, it's pushback is happening. Then right, and then the top of the next page, we have Silas Rao's summary. Like I mentioned, this great article, It's Time to Replace Slaughterhouses with Greenhouses. Really great to see how greenhouses can be used. This is new technology to grow huge amounts of food in relatively small spaces to feed everyone. We can feed everyone on a fraction of the land. I was on that movie I was just mentioning, on the end of Meat, one scientist was saying that grazing kelp in beds off the coast of Oregon in just a 25, what was it? It wasn't very big, like a, what was it? Something, 25 acres or hectares maybe area, they could grow enough kelp to turn into a protein. It tastes like bacon. They've got this new product that tastes like bacon, but in a relatively small area, maybe 2.5 square miles, maybe they could grow enough to feed everyone on the planet. You know, to meet the protein needs of everyone on the planet. So, I mean, what we're realizing is we can feed everyone on. We don't have to cut down forests and destroy ecosystems to feed people. So it's very important to understand that. Glyphosate is used as a desiccant in wheat, barley, oats, and legumes. So this is important to understand, everybody. It's not only used on animal on soy and corn and canola, but it's also used as, for GMO crops. It's also used in all these other things. So it's really important to eat organic. And then this also, this movie Stink on the hazards of chemical fragrance and and the chemicals pervading society, I think, again, very important to understand. It's not only the animal testing, but just the massive accumulation of over 90,000 different chemicals. So it's very important, I think, to just be aware of our personal care products we're using and so forth. Oh, a bunch of more important articles here. Robert Goodland's New York Times article explaining why his 51% study was undermined by the United Nations FAO. When we're talking about climate change, and this is a really important article. Some other ones, Philip Wallen's great video, this great video by an ex-pig farmer, Veganism is the Future of Farming. And this is really beautiful to see these, a former pig farmer saying that this is the future. An interesting op-ed in the New York Times, Would Human Extinction Be a Tragedy? The guy really does a good job, I think, pointing out how what we're doing to animals and in factory farming is so devastating. And from the point of view of animals, human extinction would actually be a good thing. But not to be morose, but just to be clear-minded about the facts of the situation that's being raised in the New York Times. And also this Tim Kaufman, Fat Man Rants, he's a very interesting guy. He's a vegan Christian, reaching, I think, hundreds of thousands of Christians with a very positive message of veganism. And then at the top of the third page, Michael Greger's How the Dairy Industry Designs Misleading Studies. This is a classic textbook, very important little video, how it's not difficult for these industries to design studies that will mislead people, that are designed to show that dairy products are good for you. They can design studies, and he shows exactly how they do it. So if you're interested in that, that's very interesting. Quite a few other ones interesting here. Students don't miss meat when it's replaced with legumes. Child abuse and child trafficking are more widespread than realized. And this whole thing with child abuse and child trafficking. Animals? I mean, animals are babies. They're little. They're so young when they're killed and they're trafficked. We have this massive trafficking of children. It's as we sow, so shall we reap phenomenon. So this, if you go to this website here, there's some very interesting videos about a recent conference about that in I think it was in Belgium, and then the productivity of vegan organic farming. This is another really great thing to see, that now we're talking more and more about vegan organic farming. In other words, veganic farming, not using any bone meal or blood meal or manure. And this is a really good article about how actually veganic farming is more productive than organic, or even more productive than commercial farming. So this is the most efficient way of growing food is without using animals. And so as science, as we do more and more studies on this and show this is really important. So, all right, that's basically it. The final, some other things here to have a look at. I like this graphic. This was made by Vegan Street, our good friend John. There's plenty of food for all of us if we just eat plants directly. That's the point. The amount of grain needed to eliminate world hunger is 4 million tons. Okay, we need 40 million tons to eliminate world hunger. And every year, the amount of grain fed to livestock is 760 million tons. I mean, come on. This is so important to understand that we're feeding 760 million tons of grain every year to livestock, basically wasting it. It would only take 40 million tons to end world hunger. I mean, how can we not end this world hunger, which is the driving force behind so much conflict? So I'm going to stop here. We've gone over time, but it's been wonderful. Thank you all so much, everyone, for joining us and for participating. And I wish you all a fantastic solstice tomorrow. Tomorrow apparently is one of the rare times. It only happens Oh, very rare, like once every 100 years or something, that there's a full moon on the solstice. This is really rare. So tomorrow is an extremely rare, spectacularly special day. So enjoy it. And then, of course, we have the holidays, then we have the new year. And I wish all of you just the best in that. And then I'll keep in touch about the third Thursday in January, the 17th is what we're scheduled for. And I think that will work. There's a possibility we might have to adjust it a little bit, but I'll know better. We are going to be kind of in the throes of a pretty big lecture tour there, but I think we can probably fit it in. But anyway, I'll be in touch about that. So, and if you're not sure, if you're not getting the emails, you can go to Facebook, the World Peace Diet Facilitators group. You can, I try to post things there too. All right, much love to you all. Thanks everyone for joining us. And maybe I'll just close our time now with this piece. This is from the Animal Songs album. It's called Lamb Song. It's sort of dedicated to the little lambs. They're right now, this is the time when they're being raised for the Easter lamb, and they suffer terribly. And so we can hold them in our hearts, and of course all the beings who suffered human hands, that may we awaken quickly, and may we all continue to contribute to the creative solution of the situation here on planet Earth. Much love to you all again, and we're looking forward to our next time together. Thank you so much for all your efforts. Bless you.